Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pro Photo Show for May 2015. It's Gavin Syme here, and it is time for the road trip.
Welcome to Pro Photo Show, the resource for professional and enthusiast photographers, a member of the Blueberry Network and the Tech Podcast Network. For show notes, tips, forums, and more, visit us online at profotoshow.net.
Photography world, it's Gavin Syme here, and it's good to be back after a few months hiatus. Our shows are a bit sporadic lately, but we are still here, we are still recording, and there's still quite a bit going on, actually. If you follow the new YouTube channel that I have going over at Photographic School on YouTube, I will link that in the show notes as well over at profotoshow.net, but YouTube channel Photographic School. We do quite a few fun technique videos, and usually they're relatively short, 5 to 10 minutes over on Photographic School with varying degrees of production. But I do a lot of video education these days with the Exposed Workshop, with the Photographics Workshop. Whenever I can, I get out and I teach live. I actually was able to go back to New Hampshire a few weeks ago for their state convention, and I presented Tones and Zones and did a great workshop down there. They have a really fun professional photographers association down there. And because I flew into Boston, I got to see the Boston Art Museum, and they have a wonderful early American collection, a lot of Hudson River School type stuff. And if you're a photographer, I've talked about this before, really very inspiring and will really kind of get you motivated when you go see the original masters and their scale and their presentation and their size. All this stuff crosses over because we inherited this profession from the painters, and there's a lot to be learned from the painters. So that's kind of what's been going on over here. Stay tuned to the Syme Effects page, to Photographic School, and of course my newsletter, and you can subscribe to that over at symeeffects.com/newsletter. If you want to follow along, the blog over there is where I do a lot of my posting lately. The show notes you can still find over at profotoshow.net. But with everything going on, new products at Syme Effects and all the stuff I have going on in my personal life, and just keeping busy with all these different projects I'm involved in, photography and otherwise, it's just not real easy to get shows out. A lot of our regulars that over the past years would join me for roundtables are not available these days, and so I don't have a panel just to throw together at a moment's notice. And we don't get them out as often, but we are still here. We're still talking. And if you think that you have something to contribute, if you might like to be on a Pro Photo Show roundtable at this point, we haven't thrown those out. I'm going to be looking at kind of restructuring and planning some really cool new content and roundtables, maybe some live Google Hangouts, things like that in the future where we can talk shop, talk photography, and exchange opinions and sometimes have those enjoyable and a little bit heated debates that we do on those roundtables. But today we are going to talk about the road trip. And I'm going to get to that in just a few minutes. Along with what's going on with me is our new product over at Syme Effects, and that's my new natural HDR presets that we just released. And these are amazing presets. You're going to want to check these out, and you can find them over at symeeffects.com. I got so tired, guys. I got so tired of this HDR overprocessed tone map look and all that, all the stuff that the software tended to crank out by default. And I'm a huge Lightroom guy. I make all kinds of presets for Lightroom. We have the Power Workflow collection and all that kind of stuff. All right. And I started thinking, I'm sick of the nasty HDR. I'm not saying we should never tone map or bracket or do edgy looks or anything like that. But I know when I don't see a good image, and when you just cram pixels together and pound the pulp out of them and make this overprocessed thing, it's usually not a good image. And when I went to work, I was thinking we need a simple toolkit that's focused on pulling dynamic range out. Because increasingly over the past few years, I've been doing a lot with zones, teaching exposure, studying exposure, really getting it dialed in so that I nail my exposure consistently. And it's made a world of difference in my images. You know, if you get it right in camera, everything's better. Your post-processing is better. Your finished result is better. Your image is better hanging on the wall. And you understand the light. And that's a key thing that I've talked about a lot in previous shows, in my Exposed workshop, in things like that. And when I go out and teach workshops out in the field is let's get down to the fundamentals, get down to the tones and zones, think about the light and understand it. And so through the course of all this, I'm seeing Lightroom get more and more powerful and our raw files get more and more information in them. And I'm pulling so much information and gradually I got away from tone mapping multiple images together and eventually got away for the most part from bracketing. I rarely even bracket anymore because I can meter my exposure. I can use my zones. I know exactly where my exposure is, how much information is in the scene. I know my visualization. I understand what the light's doing. And I know what I'm going to be able to do with that file, and I can confirm that by glancing at the histogram if I'm shooting digital. So I've gotten to this point where it's like, well, why waste time bracketing? Let's just make sure I did this right. Again, I'm not saying don't bracket. I'm not saying don't ever infuse or tone map. Lightroom 6 now has some built-in HDR merge features, which honestly are fairly limited, but it's another approach. But you know what? In the images I've been producing, both portrait and my pictorial work over on f164.com, and consistently over the past few years, I've been getting into merit images in the international competition with Professional Photographers of America. I've been really trying to challenge myself and continue refining the process and the light. But I usually work with a single image. I'll pull out the dynamic range I need in Lightroom. And then on my best work, I go into Photoshop and I'll do detail work and burning and dodging and things like that, like I've talked about lots of times. But at the end of the day, the information I need is in that one image if I expose well. And I think a lot of us are finding this. So long story short, I mean, I'm just kind of telling you some of the things that I've been dealing with in my imagery the past year or two and some of the revelations, if you will, that I've been coming to. And so I made this new preset collection called Natural HDR. And the principle of this is no more nasty HDR. And it's not meant to say, well, you should never tone map and you should never merge images with the plugins and the other software that's out there. It's just a simple system. And I think it's going to blow you away how much dynamic range these presets pull out in Lightroom, just using the tools in Lightroom. And so it's not about making your images look like mine. It gives you a toolkit. You can quickly pull out dynamic range, and then you can tweak and mix and match. And you're actually going to learn more about Lightroom and dynamic range as you use these. It's just a natural extension. So these have been a really successful set. They're getting rave reviews. And I just wanted to kind of share a little bit about why I'm doing dynamic range the way I am. Because high dynamic range has nothing to do with how many images you have or how much software you used or how much processing you use. It's about the light. It's about having that range of light, that high dynamic range of light to bring your image together. And so the HDR thing over the years has kind of been a little peeve of mine because I like quality refined images that we can put on the wall. Doesn't mean they have to look like mine or mine have to look like yours. We just need to understand light and what we're doing with it and not just throw things into software and expect magic to come out the other side because, well, life's just not that simple. And if we want to stand out in the professional photography world, it's a tough industry. Those of us in the business know that firsthand. So whether you're doing portraits or landscapes or commercial or whatever you're doing, I think the more we understand light, the better we are. And that's what we talk about all the time here on Pro Photo Show. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today on the show, but we're going to talk fun as well. And I've been wanting to do this show for a while. And I'm flying solo on this one because I have a lot of neat things to share, but it's not going to be a real long show. I want to talk today, as we come into summer, about the road trip because we're getting to the season. You know, people are going to have their vacations. I know a lot of you are going to be going out, you know, and you're going to do your summer or plan for your fall road trip and get ready to go somewhere new and fresh. And maybe you're going out and you're doing a wedding or a portrait shoot with it, or maybe you're just hitting the road, going to a national park or something like that. I love the road trip. And with the crazy things that I've been running with the past year and a half or so, I haven't had a lot of time. I didn't get to do a multi-month road trip over the winter with my running for Congress over here last year and being involved in liberty activism and things like that, along with all my photography. I haven't had a great road trip in a while. So I'm kind of breaking myself in again this summer, actually in a few days. In the first part of June, I'm taking off with the family. I have four kids now. Our youngest is about 4 months, but we're loading up the super camper. I've talked about the super camper before. It's ready to go. Got a load some gear, do a little cleanup, and we're going to take a road trip about 2 weeks. We're not going to do multi-month road trip. I've done as long as 4-month road trips, as many of you know. We're going to take off for 2 weeks, and pretty much the only destination I have in mind is I want to go to Yellowstone because I haven't been there in a few years. Yellowstone National Park is just a really neat place. The kids were really young when we went there, and I want to try and go for some of those images that maybe I missed last time. But the key for me with the road trip is I get together with the family. We hit the road. Our whole lifestyle changes when we're on the road. And, you know, even the foods we eat and things like that, the mode changes. And I love being at home. I love being at my studio. I love being on the road. It's just this change where we get now into travel mode. And so what I want to talk about today is some things that we can think about with the road trip. But then I'm going to go into places that you might consider going, things that'll help you, gadgets, tools on the road, and just things that I've learned over serious adventure road tripping, not in resorts or RV parks or anything like that, but just going out into the wild. And oftentimes what I find on the way to my destination, I might say, well, let's go to this national park or this place here because it's really cool. And it is. But it's also heavily photographed and there's people everywhere and that's fun sometimes. But actually, I think it's what I find oftentimes on the way to a destination that's the most amazing. And so we have the Duramax, we hook up the trailer and we just move down the road and I'm going to do about 2 weeks, try and keep my travel to around 2,000 miles or so I don't get the gas bill too high and break back into the road trip. And so, first of all, let's talk about places to go on the road trip. Build your itinerary and think about what you want to do. And you don't have to do this specifically. There's a couple ways that I take it on when I go on a road trip. One way is I'll sit and I'll look at the Google map or I'll think about places I want to go and I'll make pins and I'll mark out a rough route and I'll say, hey, let's go here and here and here. I tend to do this a little bit, but I follow it loosely when I'm doing long road trips that are months long because I might be covering 10, 15,000 miles on some of these long road trips and I might be planning my trip around the weather. If we take off for the winter, let's say I've taken off in December and come back in May. Well, I'm thinking, okay, I want to stay if possible most of the time in these warmer areas because I got the wife and kids in the RV and that makes the wife happy. If you say, hey, let's go south for the winter, that makes the wife happy. So Sandra likes that. You know, we get to go somewhere warm. But that doesn't mean we don't ever end up on the snow. And that's certainly happened many times. One of the things that's my favorite to do is to get in a car and go. Now, you can do a road trip by flying somewhere and then you rent a car and you go explore. But I cannot emphasize this enough. And a lot of photographers don't get to do this often enough. And I know it's hard. We have different jobs and different things we do. The summer season, often we have weddings. And so sometimes the fall or the winter is better, me included in this. But man, if you can take the whole family out, if you have an RV, if you can rent an RV, yes, you can fly in somewhere. Yes, you can drive and you can stay in the lodge and you can go explore. But I have to say, if you make it kind of that classic American road trip and you just take to the open road, whether you're living out of a tent or you're in an RV, you buy an RV, you rent an RV. And here's the thing. We're going to talk about gear and techniques and kind of some tips that I've learned in about 5 years of serious adventure road tripping and super camping. But you don't have to have the newest, fanciest equipment. You know, you can go out and you can get an old tent trailer for $500, $1,000. And I'm serious about this. You can get something half decent. It's not going to be fancy. It's not going to be great. But once you have something that's your own, and this is my favorite thing to do over renting an RV or something like that. You know, guys, we spend thousands of dollars on gear and on lenses and all this stuff. And to me, a camper and something that you can get out and go have your logistics in, have your equipment in, that you can go out by yourself or with your family. It's an investment. And for me, we've now had the RV, the super camper, for about 5 years. And as the family grows, I'm thinking, well, we might have to get a new one here pretty soon, as soon as that's in the budget. But you can learn all about it on F164.com. I have all kinds of information about what we've done to it and the upgrades and things like that. But that has been one of the best investments I've ever made. Not only as a dad, but as a photographer, because we've gone out, we've explored, we've got great new images. You know, workshops like my exposed workshop were made on the road during these road trips, but also what my kids get to see And in my case, my kids are homeschooled, so they get to go out and we get to see all this history and all this cool stuff. And we get to do things as a family, but also I can work on the road. And you have internet now, you know, you have like a MiFi or some kind of internet card. We carry that with us. So I can stay connected. I can stay caught up to email. I can do blog posts. I can post videos. I can keep the business rolling. Obviously, I'm not here at the studio, so I can't have sessions during the times that I'm gone. But I can keep things moving along. And what I've found is if you get yourself a system, be it, you know, an old camper or a tent trailer, or maybe you're just using a tent, but if you get yourself off the grid where you're not just in a suitcase going into hotels, you kind of get yourself a system and you start tricking out your kit. You know, in my case, the super camper has solar and it has water reserves, and it's always being upgraded. It's like a hobby of mine. So, you know, I just put some extra gas cans, got some of the old Jerry style gas cans that have the proper spouts, and they're not old. You can get these on Amazon, and I will link them in the show notes. It turns out that you still can get a gas can with a real spout, which is nice, because these gas cans that have been federally government mandated that have spouts that just spill gas everywhere, all in the name of environmental protection. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I hate those things. And I know I'm not the only one. So don't tell me that you love those gas cans, because they suck. Don't get me started on the federal government. But apparently the way the restrictions work, it doesn't apply to metal cans. So I've been buying now these Jerry cans. I've got them mounted to the bumper on the back of the RV, and you can buy these brand new off the shelf. You go to Amazon, they're about $50 for a gas can, but they're these gorgeous red or green in the case of diesel, you know, kind of powder coated. They got a real spout on them. Really neat gas can. Sometimes it's the little things, guys. Sometimes it's the little things. But what I'm getting at here is the camper is set up, and in a short period of time, quite frankly, if it was an emergency, we could be in that camper and heading down the road in about 2 hours. You know, I keep it maintained, ready to go, charged. It's got solar on the roof, water reservoirs, food reserves, equipment, radios, medical supplies, everything in there. And so I've been blessed to be able to have an even bigger reason to have a camper like this, because I go out and teach workshops and do videos and things like that. So that's helped to pay for it. It has made the payments for it. But we don't have to be extravagant to build a system out that'll help us not only enjoy wherever we're at, in my case, America, and there's so much to see here. I used to moan and groan, oh, as I started having kids, I'm thinking, great, how am I going to see the world? There's so much to see in America that I never will be able to see it all. It's absolutely gorgeous. Most people never see it. Most photographers never see it. And even if you're not a landscape photographer per se, what you will learn about light and what you will see if you hit the open road, it's just something else. So here's my suggestions, because I am going somewhere with this. First of all, you think about places you can go. And, you know, some of my favorite places are areas around Zion National Park, Grand Canyon, things like that. But those are these iconic places to go. Valley of the Gods, Utah is a great one. Utah has a lot of really cool stuff. There's so many great places wherever you are in the country, or the world for that matter. But what I find is I'll say, let's go here, and I'll set a destination because I want to see it and there's cool stuff to do there. And then I'll learn all kinds of neat stuff. I'll see all kinds of neat things along the way, and I'll just make it an adventure. And we'll just hit the road. I'll just say, well, I'm going here, but I'll get there however I want to. And in doing so, I see all kinds of off the beaten path things. Usually I don't go camp in a national park, because you go into a national park and things are busy. It's more restricted. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I love going into a national park and taking photos and looking around. But quite frankly, a lot of those photos have been done, even though there's also a lot of photos being made in the worst possible conditions and light. Going into a national park, I'm a social guy. It's a great place to take great photos and socialize with other photographers, because that's where everybody's at. But usually what I'll do, and I will link my map of my favorite camping spots from all over the country in the show notes. It's not a super public thing, but I put it out there to other photographers. And you can see coordinates. You can see places I've been. I have found hundreds and hundreds of camping spots, most of which are in the boondocks and free. And sometimes they're literally like 100 yards from the border of the national park. You know, I'll go out just outside the park and just get out in the forest where there's no specific restrictions. There's no camping. You don't have to be in a campground. And so I've studied the laws and the rules. And one of these things is the National Recreation Act is really handy for this. I mean, I know the fundamentals of law and public property and things like that. But if you're talking about national forests, BLM, that kind of stuff, I will link this in the show notes too. The National Recreation Act is basically the law that governs when they can charge you to enter somewhere, when they can charge you for camping. And the fundamentals of it are, unless it's a developed area, they can't charge you to enter and they can't charge you to camp, i.e. a national forest just parked out in the sticks. Now, it's not always that simple. Sometimes there's restricted areas. National parks have a different set of rules, which is why I oftentimes try and camp outside the national park. But part of this road trip and part of this process is we just get used to how this works. National Recreation Act is a fairly simple piece of legislation, but it just nails down, here's the ABCs, and I actually keep it handy with me just in case I'm out in the woods somewhere and somebody gives me trouble saying, hey, you can't camp here. Okay, so what I'll do, and we're talking about the road trip here, whatever you do, you're in a tent, maybe you're staying in hotels, but no, do the tent, do the camper if you can. And if you really want to grab life by the horns, go out and buy an old camper, buy yourself a tent trailer, and just start rigging it out. You'll find that it's a lot of fun, and it gets you in a position where you can work better. Because if you have your own facilities, you know, put a solar panel on the top. Now you don't have to plug in. Maybe you bring a little generator. You go out and you camp in the forest, or you camp in the desert somewhere. Some of my best images, especially my night work, has been made 50 feet from my camper. Because I can park there, I can say, wow, I want to photograph this tonight. So I'll just park the camper and we'll stay there for a night or two, and I'll get what I want to do. The 140 minutes of night, my longest digital exposure ever. You can see it over on the website. I'll link it in the show notes too. But 140 minutes of night, 2 hours and 20 minute exposure of the stars up by the Grand Canyon. And I was camped right there. And there's even a video of me setting up that shot before it got dark that I posted. So it's totally changed my understanding of light because I'm out there working with it and experimenting with it. And you're just right there. Since we're talking practical application, tent trailers are great. They're a little more drafty, but you can get them cheap. You can get a decent tent trailer. You can get a worn out tent trailer, but that'll still work for probably $500. You can get a relatively nice tent trailer for $1,000 to $2,000 oftentimes. And if you start getting in the $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, you're going to get something nice. Now, once you get into the $2,000 plus, you can start getting into a hardwall trailer. So the tent trailers are lightweight. You can pull them with almost anything. Sometimes they don't have bathrooms. You may be digging a hole out in the woods. So the larger your family, the more people you're taking with you, the more this is an issue. If it's just you or you and your wife and you're going out taking road trips, a tent trailer is great. You know, you can rig it up. You can get a rack on top. You can start, you know, hanging water cans on it. You can put a generator out there with you so you can run your computers, get your internet card, things like that. And you can just start gradually setting yourself up with a road trip rig that doesn't break the bank, because not everybody's going to be able to spend months on the road out road tripping. So a lot of people are reluctant to buy a camper because they're like, well, I'm not going to use it that much. But if you get yourself in the mode and try to get out of the mode of let's go to an RV park. I'm not saying you can't do cool things in an RV park, but if you start setting yourself up, what do I need? Ask yourself, what do I need to go out and just be off grid? Do I need a generator? That's great. Solar panel is really great because you don't have to start a generator or anything like that. My rig has 4 batteries on the front. So when it's fully charged, it has quite a bit of juice. I can run for days on that. You know, we got water reservoirs. Our rig is a 21 footer and it's a hybrid. So the ends pop out kind of like a tent trailer. And then you have a big slide out inside. So it's fairly large, even though it's not a real long unit. It still has that draftiness a little bit going on because of the pop-out ends. Not so much like a tent trailer. A tent trailer has canvas walls. You know, it pops up. Mine's a hard wall. The ends pop out. So if it's really cold out, I can leave them closed and we just throw a mattress on the floor. But now that we got 4 kids, it does get a little tighter. So when you open up both those bed ends, the kids can sleep in one, we can sleep in the other. The table can be made into a bed. The couch can be made into a bed. So it can sleep all of us really well. It's just you got to set it up. My next unit, quite frankly, will be a little longer because I'm used to towing now and maybe have an actual bedroom section for me and Sandra, and then a little bunk section or something for the kids, and probably not do the pop-out 10-ins, because I don't mind going to a 27 or a 28-footer because I'm really comfortable with towing now. You didn't think Pro Photo Show was going to become an RV show, probably, but what we're talking about is equipment to get us out and help us make better photos. And I consider my RV and the things that go with it and the system that I put together to be on the open road, to be an essential part of my gear. You know, I haven't bought a new camera in years, a new digital camera, that is. Although I am eyeing this new 50 megapixel Canon 5D R and S. And this is not new news because it's been being talked about. It's coming out in June, and it's going to be interesting. 50 megapixels is a lot to cram into a 35 millimeter sensor, but I love detail. And when you're making large prints, I think that's really going to be beneficial. So I've certainly got my eye on that. Being a Canon guy, I wasn't able to get into the Nikon and their 36 megapixel system. Now the Canon has the 50 megapixel system. You know, it's interesting. I'm going to be watching what people think of that when it comes out in June, and I may be picking one up myself. Okay, I probably will. But I also have my 4x5 film and stuff like that that I work with. So my trailer is a tool. It's completely a business write-off. And I mean this, if you're going out, if you have a photography business and you're going out doing road trips, you can write off those miles. You can write off the rig itself, the equipment, the upgrades for it. Now, understand, I'm not your accountant and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not telling you exactly how to do your taxes. I'm just saying that these are tools. This is equipment. And so if you start building up this equipment, it's phenomenal. And you may find yourself using this for portraits or weddings. I mean, if you have to do an on-location portrait session somewhere, you can hook up your camper. If you got a well-rigged camper and you have a base unit now. So sometimes it's almost worth it to have this thing with you just so you have a bathroom with you everywhere you go. It's really phenomenal, especially if you have kids with you. So now let's talk about actually getting out in the wilderness on the road trip. I could talk about campers all day because I love them, but I won't drive you crazy with that. Whatever you're doing, you're tenting, you're moteling, you're driving, you're living out of the back of a station wagon, you're pulling a camper, you're getting out and you're exploring. Now, here's some things that I've learned in being on the road, regardless of the type of equipment that you're living in. You're going to be out in the wilderness. You're going to be out doing things. You want to make sure that you have the right equipment, battery chargers. If you're not in a camper with power, maybe you want to look at a little folding solar panel or something like that. There is a lot of those out there now, like the Goal Zero. There's some inexpensive ones off Amazon that are actually not expensive at all and very powerful. So you can get like a 10 watt solar power charger that'll charge cell phones and devices and things like that. And you can get a battery system where you could have a little inverter to charge camera batteries, things like that. If you're camping or hiking, think about weight. Think about, are you going to be setting up a tent or an RV or a hotel and kind of have that be your base camp? And so you can charge and do equipment, or are you doing something where you're going to go back and hike in for a week? I haven't done really a lot of extended hiking trips. You know, we've done some very intense hikes like the subway hike in Zion National Park. So for something like that, you know, we were hauling in all this gear. My brother Nathan and I were out there and we were working on the photographic film. And so we had video equipment, we had photo equipment. We probably had 100 pounds of gear between us, hauling back, crawling over boulders and crossing creeks. And you can't camp back there because it's in a national park. In fact, we had to get a permit just to go back there. So sometimes in the more populous areas, the more popular areas, even though there wasn't a lot of people back there, it was a limited area. But you get into a national park or something, especially the big ones like Grand Canyon or Zion or Arches, there's way more restrictions to deal with. And I'm not saying don't go to those places, but a lot of times you get on the outskirts. You know, you get into really cool areas that aren't a national park or a national monument, and they're every bit as cool. They're just not full of people. So that's something to think about too. The more you do it, the more you'll learn about that. If you're going on a road trip and you're going to a state, I'd really suggest, you know, getting an app or going on Amazon and getting a book for that state. You know, the best waterfalls of Washington, or, you know, the some kind of a guide to give you ideas. Because oftentimes you'll get a book and it'll show all these cool places and the photos are nice, but they're not iconic, international, award-winning kind of photos. They're just good photos. So you'll get a book that shows all these great secret spots of the area that you're going to, and then you look through and you're like, well, if the light's right, I can get a better image than that. And oftentimes I do. So that's one way to do it, to kind of research where you're going. Another way is you just say, hey, let's go here, but we'll just explore along the way. And sometimes I love getting up in the forest and or the desert, quite frankly, I don't really care. But once we're camped somewhere, once we're settled, that's one of the reasons I like camping in the wilderness versus a hotel. You get settled somewhere and that becomes your base. And then you just drive around and explore and you have no idea. You never know what you're going to find. And so you discover a lot of things that way. You get light challenges and things that you can improve your skills on, and also get things that are unique and a little more rare as you do that. So we talked about your equipment, making sure you got your battery chargers and things like that. Whatever you're carrying with you, consider your equipment, your data connections, your internet, if you're going to need to be doing that. The goal of camping for me is not suffering. My success in camping is not measured by how much I suffer or whether my roof leaks. It's being able to get out there and have the adventure and see the things and take to the open road. The other thing, let's talk about safety a little bit, because you get out there and when we hiked the subway, okay, so we hiked probably it was 8 miles or so round trip, but this was not a nature trail. This was crossing back and forth, fording the creek, crawling over boulders up and down and following the trail. Well, we got up to the subway, and you can see the photos of this on F164.com. We got up to the subway and got some beautiful light, but it was fall, a great time to hike that area because it's not screaming hot. So think about what the weather's doing where you're going to be going. We were hauling all that gear. It was probably 70, 75 degrees that day. So it was nice, right? This is down on the southern side of Utah. But the sun still sets early in the winter, or in the fall for that matter. It's starting to set earlier. So yeah, we got our sunset up here, but now we're having to come back. And it got dark pretty soon after we started heading back. And we're talking about miles of trying to pick our way through. And it's a big valley you're walking down. So you're watching for, you know, trails that people have walked, for markers where people have stacked up rocks to know that this is the way you need to go. And it was a pretty intense thing, especially in the dark. Now, I brought headlamps, flashlights, things like that. You want to overdo stuff like that, especially if you're doing serious hikes. If you're driving the car and you're road shooting, maybe you don't need as much. But if you're going out hiking and stuff like that, think about safety. We had first aid kit, we had food, and we also brought some extra stuff like Snickers bars and things like that because they have a lot of calories. And I'll tell you what, by the time we got back, we were down to that Snickers bar. It was a serious hike hauling all that gear. And in that final leg, we finally got back kind of to the mouth, and you had to climb up the trail that went up the side of the cliff and get in about, must have been 600 or so feet of elevation coming up out of there. I mean, we were exhausted. That Snickers bar, that was like a lifesaver right there. That extra bit of fuel at the end helped a lot. We should have actually brought more, but we had light. If the lights had gone dead, if we had just had our phone and like, oh, I have a flashlight in my phone, we would have been staying in there. We would not have been getting out that night. We probably would have been in pretty serious trouble because you're not supposed to camp in there. In fact, we got out. We probably didn't get out of that valley till back to the trailhead till 9:30 or so. And the park ranger was actually there because they knew we were in there because we'd had to go get a permit. I think it cost us $10 or something like that. Mainly the idea, I guess, is so they know that you're down there because this was a pretty serious hike. But he was waiting there, probably thinking he was about to have to come in after us. And so they didn't give us any trouble. We were still within the time frame. There's no rule that we had to be out before dark. But had we not had the proper lights and things like that, it would have been serious. And here's something that I didn't really account for. And I'm just going to be candid about this. When we were deep back in Zion, and we were the last ones out. You know, most people, they hike in, they want to get out before dark, and they don't care so much about waiting for sunset light in the photos. A lot of people don't. So everybody had headed back out. We were the very last ones out. So it's kind of eerie. We're way up. I mean, we're miles and miles from anywhere. And we're up on the subway, and we're doing these beautiful photos, and we're doing video, and then we start hiking back because finally we have to cut it off. We have to start moving. And we're trying to hoof it because we know it's going to get dark soon. Darkness descends, and we're heading back in the dark. And both of us were there. And, you know, I'm not somebody that's like, how do I put this? I'm not afraid of the dark, but it was a little intimidating because we're hiking back with all this gear in the dark. There's no clearly defined trail. There were times where we'd go down the wrong way and we'd just end up hitting a rock wall. You know, and we knew we weren't going to freeze to death. We knew if something went wrong and we couldn't get out of there that, you know, even if we had to sleep under a tree till morning, we were still going to be there. But psychologically, it was more intense coming out of that hike than I expected, because we had the gear, we had to cross streams, we had to crawl over boulders. There was one time, even though we had the headlamps and lights, in retrospect, doing it again, I would want even brighter ones and more of them. I would want to illuminate that valley. And with LEDs, we can do that. You can carry a lot of powerful lights with you. You know, I might clip one to the backpack or something like that. The light was key. And if we just had cell phones or something, they would have gone dead. They wouldn't have been bright enough. We would have been stuck because it was pretty moonless. And if there had been no flashlights, you literally could not have kept moving. There would have been nowhere to go. You would have had no clue where to go because you had to pick your way, try to get across the creek. You know, even with our lights, there was one or two times where I would step into the creek and I would miscalculate and my foot went into a hole or something. I mean, you could break your leg up there. So having a couple people, having a team is even better if you're doing intense hikes. But if you're alone, make sure you've got first aid. Make sure you got some emergency supplies, regardless of whether you're alone. You know, make sure you know how to treat a broken bone. Make sure you know how to deal with bleeding. And so for me, I'm an amateur herbalist and I like studying first aid and medical stuff and things like that. So I'm pretty into that kind of stuff. And we have a fairly extensive medical kit in the trailer. And then I have smaller ones that I take out with me. But the more you learn about this stuff, the more you understand what you're getting into. Don't be the naive hiker photographer. And you don't want to be that guy that they have to airlift out and you get a bill for $10,000 for. So plan safely. And this doesn't just go for the great extreme hikes. You know, you're out in the wilderness, sometimes in the desert. You know, think about what you're dealing with. There's always bear spray in the camper. And we're not always in places that have bears, but you got this large can of pepper spray, so you have it something for a degree of defense. And I usually carry that on me wherever I'm at. You know, maybe I'm in an urban situation photographing under a bridge. Well, if somebody tries to mug me, at least I got my bear spray. Now, I oftentimes carry a shotgun or something with me in the camper as well. And I am a staunch Second Amendment guy. And so I fully believe in the right to protect my family. But sometimes when I'm out and about, I don't want to deal with all the variations in state laws and stuff like that and end up in the slammer while my family's waiting back at the trailer. So sometimes I'll carry the bear spray with me. But whatever your plan is, whatever it is that you're comfortable with, think about what could you be dealing with and go prepared. And this is one of the reasons, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but it's one of the reasons I love having a camper, because you have it rigged out. It's not like every time you're loading stuff in the back of the station wagon and you don't have room for this and you don't have room for that. You know, my camper is my base. So I have two-way radios. And by the way, that's a great thing to have with you if you're out hiking. Get a ham radio or a two-way radio. You can get the little FRS radios. Those are okay. But my favorite are the little ham radios. And Bifang makes these great dual-band ham radios. And they're 2 meter, 440. They do FRS frequencies and GMRS frequencies. So if you're a ham radio operator, you're supposed to be licensed. And I do have a ham radio license. But there's still other frequencies you can operate on. And these are powerful little radios that are very versatile. And they're only about $30 a piece. So if you're out hiking, you know, make sure every team member has a radio, because your cell phone may not work. Don't rely on that. And that way you at least have something to communicate with. Now, of course, radio frequencies might be stopped by that hill or that mountain over there. Keep that in mind. You know, learn how your radio works. Practice with it. This is all equipment. We always talk about the cameras and the lenses and stuff, but regardless of where you're at, and sometimes this applies to when you're out doing a portrait session, you know, you want to be prepared. You want to be equipped in your photographic equipment, but also equipped with other things. And so there's a lot of stuff I can do back at the camper, which is my base unit. I can repair things. You know, I've got my tool kits and I've got portable saws and I've got all kinds of stuff. In fact, for me, one of the fun parts of camping is invariably, you know, you're beating down these broken old forest roads. Things get broken. And I kind of love doing the DIY. I mean, I'll repair things out there in the field. I'll add lights on the top of the camper. We've got these floodlights all around on the roof of the camper. And so there's that fun aspect of it, but there's also the practical aspect. You got your preparedness. You've got your first aid. You've got a plan. You know, try and make sure people know where you're going. And go out and hit the trail. But even if you're just hiking out a half a mile from camp, be prepared. You know what you're dealing with. Get your survival plan in order. Know how to use your equipment. Have your emergency equipment. And get your system together. Important stuff. Now, a few things that as you gear up, if you start doing more road trips, you're probably going to love having extra water cans. I love the military spec water cans, and I will link those in the show notes as well. These are ultra heavy duty military water cans. They're 5 gallons a piece. You can drive over these things with a truck. They look similar to a jerry can, but they're super heavy plastic. As you grow your kit, your road trip kit, you're going to want more tools, maybe pocket chainsaw. I have a cordless reciprocating saw, folding shovels. Gerber makes a great one. A portable compressor is great. You know, you get out in the sand somewhere and you get stuck. Well, one of the ways to get unstuck is you let the air out of your tires. I mean, think about this stuff. We have a great little heavy duty jump starter box that's big enough for the diesel. And that thing can be invaluable. And I can speak to this firsthand. You are out in the middle of nowhere and there's no one else around and you have a dead battery, you're kind of hosed. No cell reception, nobody for 20 miles, and nobody there. So what's a little thing when you're down at the local grocery store is a big thing when you're out in the wilderness. And it's not about how much money you spend, it's about thinking things through. So as I go along, I build up my kit and I learn things that, hey, I could have used this. But I always keep essentials like knives, machetes, folding saw, folding shovel. That kind of stuff is always at my base camp, at the very least. Tools, things like that. I always keep some paracord around. A lot of little stuff that can make you a better everything. A better camper, a better road tripper. So water is essential too. Make sure you bring plenty of water. And one of the things that we'll do, there's different things you can do. If you're doing long hikes, you can only haul so much water with you. And so you can either bring a water filter, water purification tablets, which aren't my favorite way to do it, but you can also bring a water filter, a portable water filter. And there's some great ones of those. If you look out, if you go to outfitter stores or online or something like that, you can find some great ones. We also use that little pen, and it's like a UV light that kills the bacteria. And we actually use that on the hike up to the subway, because we had the stream all the way up. You're kind of following the stream and the water was there. So it was the SteriPen that we used. And this was a UV water purifier. It didn't filter out mud or anything like that, but it killed the harmful bacteria. And some people like these, some people don't. I thought it worked really well. I didn't get sick. But there's also the filter type that are super fine micron filters. You can get them for anywhere from $100 to about $300. There's things like the Life Straw, things like that. So if you're out hiking, regardless of where your base camp is, make sure you're carrying water or you have a means to filter water that's going to be there and that there is going to be water there. Because when you're out at high noon in White Sands, New Mexico, and the sun's beating down and glaring around you, you better have water. And when you talk to people like in the Grand Canyon, those kind of areas, people not planning properly, you know, they go and they hike, they decide they're going to hike to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, they carry a bottle of water with them. You know, they don't go prepared, they don't go for their equipment. And usually it's those kind of people that end up having to be rescued. The people that go in prepared to a situation, regardless of where you're having your adventure at, generally come out just fine. So just a few things when you're out there hitting the road. You got your first aid. I think it's really useful to learn about your herbs and plants. You know, common wild herbs that are out there. If you can identify them, carry some with you. I always carry some Kion with me because Kion will help stop bleeding. Even serious bleeding internally is one of the things that Kion pepper. And I know that sounds simple and rudimentary, but I've had firsthand experience with seeing this work to stop hemorrhaging. And, you know, maybe you want some quick clot or something like that in your medical kit, but things like that, you can study things like that. And cayenne pepper is a powerful herb that you can take a couple teaspoons internally, just chug it down in a glass of water, and you can actually use it to stop pretty severe bleeding. It's known to be useful for that. I've never had it hemorrhaging myself that I stopped it down, but I have known people that used it for that. And so, as always, especially with medical and health things and first aid, do your own research, figure out what's what. But I study this stuff pretty extensively, and I really love it, and it helps me feel more prepared. So when you're out there and you're on the road, maybe you're walking, maybe you're hiking, maybe you're just driving your truck. A lot of times when you're on the road trip, you just get in the car and you want to cruise the back roads and things like that. That's one of my favorite things to do. But generally, you want to get off the beaten path. So bear in mind that old dirt roads can go from bad to worse very quickly. Keep in mind where you're camping. You know, low areas can have flash flooding, so consider where you're at, how mud or snow can affect your situation. I think I've told my story on this show before. The first year that we did serious camping out in the wilderness, and we were pulling the super camper with the Expedition, and we'd parked it way up in this plateau down by Zion. We have this gorgeous spot up there, and I actually, after 3 years, got the image that I was finally looking to get from that spot. And it's taken me a long time, but I have this gorgeous panorama that's almost finished, and I'm going to be coming out with soon of this whole, the whole Zion Valley at sunset as a storm's coming in. And it just, I was so excited to finally get this one because I kept going back and going back and going back and waiting for the conditions and the light to be right. Sometimes you just wait for it. We were coming down this area, and we went out exploring, and it had been raining. It was fall. It was our first time in Zion. We thought we were so cool. You know, we had our camper. We were up there in the wilderness. But all that beautiful red earth around there, when it rains for 4 days, that stuff turns into like 4 inches of red snot. All right, so we're out exploring up in the little back roads outside of Zion, and we go up this little dirt road that would be fine in normal conditions, but it's drizzling rain, and it has been for days. And we're just looking, finding new camping spots. We're cool. We're out there. I got the family with me. And the GPS shows that this road goes around. So I go up, and we're just going to loop around. Well, it turns out the road doesn't loop around. Don't always trust your GPS. Don't go wherever your GPS tells you. So I'm like, okay, we'll turn around. We come back, and we got to go down this windy little dirt snot road of Utah red snot that used to be nice hard clay a few days ago. And so we start going down this thing, and I touch the brakes and nothing's happening. We're still going down because it's so slippery. We're just sliding down. And so we're coming down this thing, and I gradually slow down. I actually touched the brakes. It didn't stop, and I kind of bounced off the dirt wall on the other side. And on the right side here, on the passenger side, is a drop-off. You know, it goes off the edge. So I'm like, okay, let's keep it to this side. At least I'll just crash into the dirt. And so we didn't crash hard. It didn't set off airbags or anything, but I bumped off the embankment. And so I get to a stop, finally, and I'm like freaking out. I'm like, how are we going to get down from this place? You know, I've got a half a mile of hill to go down yet. And so it was so bad. I actually had the family get out of the car because I'm like, we might go off the edge with this thing. We could die out here, people. We could die out here. So all the family had to get out, and I said, you got to walk down. So Sandra's carrying the kids. I think we only had two at that time. I think we had Cyrus and Anna. She's carrying them down, and they were young. And I start going down, and I'm not kidding. I was creeping down that hill, sliding rather, down that hill, you know, praying my way down. But the door was open because I'm like, this thing's going to go off the edge. I'm going to slide. The truck's going to slide right off. So as I'm going down this hill, I'm thinking, how are we going to get a new truck? How are we going to get home? What am I going to do when this thing goes off into the chasm as it like careens off the edge and just slips right over? And so I'm going down, and I actually had the door open, and I was ready to leap out of the Expedition as it plummets off the edge and tumbles downward. I was ready to leap out, jump out the door, and reach for that life-giving snot and cling to the edge of the road so I didn't go with it. It was something. But I'll tell you what, when I got to the bottom, that muddy, flat road at the bottom was a very refreshing thing. So, but what did we do? That made me start thinking about our equipment. Our tires weren't great. So I always try and make sure I'm going out with really good tires if possible, especially when I'm going to be getting off road. I don't have to have huge mud treads, but I try and be prepared. I have compressors so I can lower the air pressure in the tires, or if I have one go flat, I can pump it up. That compressor has come in handy a lot of times. In fact, there's times when I have got out of sand traps by taking all but 5 pounds of air pressure out of my tires and getting out. But of course, when you get back to paved road, you need air to put that in. So we have a fairly heavy-duty portable compressor that you can hook up to the battery of your rig. And I think it was, I don't know, you can get cheap ones for that are good for $50 or $60, and you can get heavier-duty ones like I carry for $150 or something like that. But you know what? I use that thing so much, not only around home, but when we're on the road. So all this preparation, sometimes I carry a motorcycle with me. We have bike racks on the top of the truck. Anyways, you can learn about our rig in particular if you go over to the Super Camper page on F164.com. I have an article over there called The Super Camper's Guide to the Galaxy. I know this has been kind of a lot of ongoing rambling today, and I hope you guys have got something out of it. Here's the thing. What's it all boil down to? I'm out there. I want to enjoy nature. I want to see things I haven't. I want to enjoy my family. Oftentimes they're with me on these trips, and I want to get great images. So all of this stuff comes together, and all these tools and knowing how to pull it all together and being comfortable out in the wilderness. The more you do this, when I first started doing this, when I first said, well, we're not going to stay in RV parks anymore. We're just going to go find places. We're going to be bold. I'm going to learn to find places to camp. And we learned resources to find places to camp, like maps that show land boundaries. AccuTerra is one of the ones that does this pretty good. It's not terribly inexpensive, but it's a subscription thing. I think it's about $30 a year or something, but you can download detailed topo map grids that you can use offline. So you can use them when you're out in the wilderness to map out your area, because the GPS on the phone doesn't actually need your cellular data, providing your maps are downloaded. That's a really good tool too that I always have with me. But what I love about NeoTrex is you can overlay land boundaries. So you can see specifically, okay, this is National Forest, this is BLM, this is not. It'll show you where those public property boundaries are, where national park boundaries are, things like that. And that's immensely helpful in just being able to get out and make a great base camp to start out with. Now, I'm sure some of you listen to this are, you know, intense hikers, and you are way more intense than I am, and you know more than I do. I'm speaking kind of generally about equipment and gear and RVs and just thoughts that we should consider to get out on the open road. Do your own research, make a plan, figure out what you want to do. But if you get out on the road trip, it's the road trip of 2015. Get out this summer or this fall, see something new, take to the open road with a car or a tent or an RV. Well, you can't drive a tent, so you'll probably put the tent in the car and still have a car and a tent. You get the idea. Get out there and see some things. And when you do, then we get out there. One of my favorite things about the road trip is getting to slow down and learn about light. And we take this for granted so much because we got all this camera, these cameras and all this gear and all this cool stuff that we can do. But you know what? There's more to it than that. We're seeing these amazing places. We're taking photos. But take a breath, enjoy it, slow down, think about the light. I don't trust the camera. I trust myself. And once we stop hoping that the camera gets it right, everything changes. And the road trips and the adventures help with that because they give me the time to think about what's the light doing. Truly look at the light on your road trip this summer, guys, as we're kind of coming to the end. I don't really have a pick of the week this time, because I've given you all kinds of picks throughout. And if you want to catch up to this, I'm going to put a bunch of links in the show notes over at profotoshow.net with some really cool stuff in it. So go over there and check it out, depending on what type of adventure road trip you're looking to take. But hit the open road and then stop being afraid of light. Photographers tend to be fundamentally terrified of light in one form or another, and we should be comfortable with all forms of light. So go on your road trip and go out and, you know, see the Grand Canyon. Experiment with how hard that haze actually is to deal with. You know, sometimes the most grand, incredible places are the hardest to photograph because they're so vast. Vastness in an image and conveying that is tough. Get a great image, set it on a tripod so you can go home and make a great image and make a wall print of it so you can show that scale. Study that light. Utilize the darkness out at your camp. Do some light painting. Do some star trails. There's so many things you do when you're out in that environment because you get away from the pace and the hustle and bustle. Put the TV and the smartphone down for a few hours and make some great images. You get out in the wild and it all changes. It's simple in a sense. You know, photography and the artistry of it is not simple in the large sense. And I hope you've seen the photographic series over at SimFX, because we put a lot of time, we had some great guests in that film, and really talked about the artistic side. Exposed, we talked about exposure and light and everything related to it. And then in photographics, we talked about everything related to the art of photography and how we can better understand it. Because if you understand the fundamentals of light and what you're doing, you have your equipment, you have your gear, you're out there in the wild. Now you want to be able to apply the artistry to that to make something more than ordinary. But when it comes to your light, don't think you're going to go out into the national park in noonday sun with all the tourists and make great images. What I do, regardless of where I am, but I love going into the national parks in the afternoon with the family, and we'll just cruise around. Sometimes I'll carry the 4x5 on my shoulder and just strike up conversations with it. I like to talk, all right? I like to meet people. But I'm not actually using it usually at that time of day, because the light's not right. So what I'll often do is I'll go out with the family. We'll explore. We'll see things. We'll go to the museums. We'll go to the ranger stations. They'll do the stuff. You know, they'll do the coloring books and all that kind of stuff. But while I'm doing that, I'm scouting. I'm exploring. And so it's wonderful. I love doing this with the family. You know, Saundra's got the littlest one in her little baby backpack, and we just wander around. We don't go on super intense hikes, but I see areas and I get ideas. I talk to people, I talk to rangers, and I figure, okay, I want to go here or I don't want to go there. And then I make a plan so that oftentimes I'll drop the family off at the camper. They can play around, you know, get dinner ready. I'll go out and do sunset, then we'll come back, have a fire and roast marshmallows. I'm telling you what, there's nothing like it. And I am doing it. I'm taking off for at least 2 weeks. Hopefully we'll do another trip later this year, but it's been too long since I've had a good road trip. So I'm taking off, and you should too. And when you get out there, there's three things you can think about. And this is kind of my tip of the day to help us overcome the photographer's fundamental fear of light. There's really three things that make up your image. One is the light source, the sun, the reflector, everything. Maybe it's reflecting off that rock. Maybe it's a flashlight. One, think about your light source. Two is how we see. Think about how we convey that light and that emotion, that three-dimensional world into the two-dimensional world. And the more you stop and think about that, and this is why I love studying the master painters in art, think about what you're looking at rather than just take a picture of it. I love using a tripod, not only for its stability, but because I stop and I look, I turn on the live view, and I think about what I'm actually making. Number three is the instrument. The camera is just a tool. We have to know what that tool is doing. We need the tools and the resources and the equipment to get there and make the image. And sometimes that means a rope, and sometimes it means a bottle of water, and sometimes it means a tripod or a really good camera, but it all needs to come together to get us there safely and get us what we need to do. And of course, once you have all that, now you see, you hear the light, you think about your image, now you have to apply the artistry to that image to fulfill your vision and your visualization. So when you go out and road trip this year, visualize. Don't hesitate. Don't rush it. Don't think you need to come home with 100,000 images. If I go out for an evening sunset and I get one image, that's all I need. I'm thrilled. It doesn't always happen that way. I just posted a video on Photographic School last week. The latest video there is a scene from when we were out filming Photographics. And it's not in Photographics, but it's one of the scenes that we were out filming. And we were at Cedar Breaks National Monument in Utah in the fall. Up there, we had this glorious sunset. And I was using the 4x5, and we had some technical issues, and I missed the shot. But sometimes you learn a lot from missing the shot. So head over and check out that video. I'll link it in the show notes over at profotoshow.net. Head over to SimFX, SEIMEffects.com, and check out the new natural HDR presets, because I don't care if you're shooting portraits or weddings or pictorials or commercial, you will love these presets. Guaranteed. They're incredibly powerful. They really pull out the dynamic range in our images without overdoing it. They give you control, and they give you the ability to more effectively and efficiently edit your images and then tweak them and build them the way that you want to fulfill your visualization. And they work great with all our other presets over at SimFX.com. And I should have thrown out earlier for you Pro Photo Show listeners, if you enter coupon code PPS... don't tell everyone now, Enter promo code PPS and it will save you 15% over at simeffects.com on any of the workshops, any of the presets, all that good stuff. So I hope you enjoyed the show today. It was a little bit of a diversion from the normal talking technique, and we talked about the road trip. So go out and make your 2015 road trip and send me an email. Tell me how cool it was and where you went, because I might want to go there. And head over to profotoshow.net for the links, and to my website, simestudios.com. And from there, you can get to my pictorials and my portraits and all that good stuff. And if you have any questions, comments, feedback, or ideas, you can send them to profotoshow@gmail.com. Or if you think you have something to contribute and you might want to be on our new reformatted roundtables that hopefully will be coming up real soon. Thanks for listening. This has been Pro Photo Show. Have a good month, and we will talk to you real soon. Oh no, did I not start the recording? Oh, okay. It's there. We're good, guys. We're good.